Collaborators on this project are Dr. Julia Quint, who was at the time of this project the chief of the Hazard Evaluation System and Information Service at the State Health Department in California at the Occupational Health Branch, and Dr. Katie Wolf, who's the executive director of the Institute for Research and Technical Assistance. And the project was conceived of and funded by HESIS, and all the alternative lithographic cleanup products that I'm going to talk about were developed by the Institute for Research and Technical Assistance. The project had additional support, either financial or in-kind support, from a variety of local, state, and U.S. EPA Region 9, as well as the Northern California media workers. And it was conducted by UC Berkeley School of Public Health through a contract with the Public Health Institute. So in lithographic printing, printed and non-printed areas are kept separate by utilizing the fact that oil and water don't mix. A plate with the image to be printed, which you can see at the bottom of the slide there, is mounted on a cylinder that rotates, and it comes into contact with rollers wet by water. I could actually maybe figure this out. Rollers wet by water or rollers wet by ink, although I'm honestly not sure which one's supposed to be the ink and the water really in this picture. But anyway, by the rollers then distribute the water or the ink, and the ink wets the printing areas, and the dampening solution or the water solution wets the non-printing area, and that prevents the non-printing areas from being receptive to the ink. Next, the ink-wetted image is transferred or offset to the blanket cylinder over here, and then it's transferred to paper or another substrate when the paper passes between the blanket and the impression cylinders, basically lithographic printers use volatile organic compounds with significant acute and chronic toxicity to clean the ink-coated blankets and rollers. So the use of VOCs in lithographic cleanup is both a worker and an environmental hazard. Printers use solvent-soaked cloths to basically, they wipe across. He's got a solvent-soaked cloth in his hands, and he's basically going to wipe it with his hand, the blanket with his hand, and the solvents. And then the solvents go up in the air, the VOCs go up in the air, they mix with nitrous oxide and sunlight, and they form ozone, ground-level ozone, and in turn, results in significant health impacts ranging from decreased lung function and increased respiratory symptoms to serious morbidity and mortality. So the regulation of volatile organic compounds by the South Coast Air Quality Management District in California spurred the development of low VOC alternatives. And the alternatives also have the potential to benefit worker health. But the environmental and occupational health benefits of the regulation had not really accrued to areas outside the purview of the South Coast Air Quality Management District. So we undertook a project to promote the implementation of safer alternatives to toxic cleanup solvents in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the objectives of this project were to identify lithographic printers potentially at risk for solvent-related health problems, evaluate printer solvent use, and then look for opportunities and barriers to using the safer alternatives. We constructed a convenience sample of printers, employers, union, industry, and government representatives, and we observed the use of VOC cleanup solvents at print shops, and we listened to participants we had a focus group and conducted key informant interviews, and then we disseminated information about safer alternatives via a fact sheet, which you can see here, and since I've left them all in my hotel room, I would be pleased to mail you one if you wanted some copies of the fact sheet. And disseminate, and we also conducted a workshop. So overall, 66 individuals participated in the project, 15 print shops, 10 government agencies, a union, and a printing industry representative. We did 5 workplace walkthroughs, 1 focus group, 12 key informant interviews, and 1 workshop that had 48 participants. The print shops ranged in size from 6 to 157 printers, and printers at all the shops cleaned the presses, rollers, and blankets by hand, even if they had, some of the presses have, upper, the upper right, oh, up upper right-hand corner, that's some printing presses have automated systems where they fill up those containers with the solvents, and then the solvents are distributed automatically. But even with presses with automated systems, the printers still use their hands to clean as a supplement. So the bottom picture over here is a roller, an ink-coated roller. And this woman, this printer, is cleaning it by taking basically a squirt bottle of solvent, and she squirts it all along the length of the roller and then uses either a squeegee to apply pressure or a cloth to basically wipe the ink off. It's not especially high-tech, so I was able to understand the work process. Anyway, the blankets and rollers... in cleaning up, they use about a half, it takes about a half hour to 2 hours a day per printer. And that was just data from three shops. So the used solvent-soaked cloths are then stored in a container with a lid, and they're sent to a commercial laundry for washing. And the shops used about 0.7 to 36 gallons of cleanup solvents a day. All of the printers have the potential for skin exposure while cleaning the press. And all the shops had nitrile gloves available, but I observed hand cleaning at one shop, and you always figure that if they're doing this in front of you, it can only be worse if you're not there. And then when we did the focus group, one of the printers, they didn't use gloves, or it was variable, but he and another coworker, they didn't use gloves because their boss had said that the gloves were only for cosmetic purposes. At all of the shops, hand cleaning placed the printers' breathing zones less than an arm's length away from the solvent-soaked cloths in the absence of local exhaust ventilation to capture the vapors. And at two shops, you can see the entire ventilation system was based on opening the door and or putting on a fan. So the cleanup products in use at the shops that we were working with, all the printers were exposed on a daily basis to products containing a high concentration of hazardous solvents that have deleterious acute and chronic impacts, primarily on the central nervous system and skin. So they were using things like xylene, toluene, trimethylbenzene, glycol ethers, and hexane. For the 19 products that were formulated for organic solvents, 60% of them contained... 15 of them contained more than 60% organic solvents, and another 9 contained over 90% organic solvents. One of the products was formulated from D-limonene, which is a skin irritant and can cause allergic contact dermatitis. And more than a third of the products in use had one or more chemicals with important acute and chronic human health impacts beyond general solvent toxicity. For half of the high VOC products in use, the skin hazard was significantly compounded by the capacity of one or more chemical constituents to be absorbed through the skin in substantial quantities and contribute to systemic toxicity. In terms of the low VOC alternatives, overall the products were less hazardous to human health and the environment than the high VOC products in use, and they were also efficacious and cost competitive. But they were not all the same, which reflects the need to clean ink, and depending on what ink is being used and depending on what the substrate is, they need kind of a variety of ways products. Four of the products that were tested that had no hazardous ingredients enlisted on the material safety data sheets. Four were formulated from fatty acid esters such as soy and or surfactants. And materials like soy clean most types of inks, and they're also environmentally safe. Six were formulated from organic solvents that are less hazardous, so that would be like acetone, or they used much lower concentrations of more hazardous solvents. And two of them contained chemicals with skin notation, and one of the products contained a small amount of a chemical that, as it turns out, is an endocrine disruptor, which, of course, if you start to use products with endocrine disruptors, you'd be shifting the hazard environmentally from the air to the water. So the printer inhalation exposure was definitely mitigated by the low VOC alternatives, but dermal exposure is not. And it could be exacerbated, not only because of the nature of the chemicals that they're using, but a concern is that the printers will think, well, these are safer products, so we don't need to use our gloves anymore if they were using them. I'm going to switch over now to some opportunities and barriers. Foremost opportunity was the fact that the South Coast Air Quality Management District made a regulation, and that also spurred the development of the alternatives, which would not have existed probably without in the absence of the regulation. In terms of barriers, the regulation was opposed by some members of the printing industry, and it took a long time to implement it. It's going to be come into force in full force January 1st, 2008, after many years of back and forth. It was not implemented statewide, so you can see at the bottom there, the South Coast is over here, and those stars were awarded by me by the virtue of at least five other California air districts are now planning to have regulations similar to what the South Coast did. So that's obviously the generalization of a regulation is certainly an important opportunity. The printers were all concerned about their health and safety, but they had received health and safety training, but they still lacked specific information about the hazards of the cleanup solvents they were using, and they had no knowledge of the availability of safer alternatives. The employers had a demonstrated commitment to greening their business that we were working with. They also had prior experience and success with making changes to comply with environmental regulations. So kind of what we were trying to do was not really new to them. But it was a common problem that particularly the smaller shops in California and actually industry-wide, a lot of printing is done with shops with less than 20 workers, and so they really lack the technical expertise to kind of go through the MSDSs and figure out the pluses and minuses of all the different products. Also, there, you know, as in most situations, Sport for Change competed with the fast-paced production schedules of print shops. And some supervisors were resistant to change, and that's a subject for a whole other talk. In terms of the supply chain, the suppliers are really an important source of information for printers about the chemicals that they're using, but the chemical companies and the suppliers were really generally not engaged in helping the printers, either in the development of safer alternatives or in helping printers select safer alternatives prior to the South Coast regulation. And also factors unrelated to occupational environmental health, cost, or efficacy, such as perks and personal relationships, which has been kind of fondly dubbed by some on this project as the football ticket syndrome, that there's other factors that are influencing the decisions that printers are making. Tim has kind of laid out very well before, the lack of complete MSDSs and information about the chemicals in use overall is just a huge barrier in terms of doing finding safer alternatives. And particularly because we were really looking at these products in terms of endocrine disruptors, it's really hard to find good information about endocrine disruptors. And that's like if you're paid to do it, as opposed to even then how would a printer really try to approach this. So in terms of opportunities and barriers in terms of linking occupational environmental health, it was really essential to preventing unintended consequences. It's a great example of the benefits of this kind of linkage because the products that might have met the South Coast Air Quality District Management District's criteria in terms of VOCs, still many of those things could have had a lot of toxicity for workers. So because occupational health was integrated at the start of the project, they never really went down many roads that would have not been too good. Tim also laid out very well the problems with the current status of occupational health regulations. So by using leveraging the environmental regulation to protect workers, it kind of circumvented some of these inadequacies. So, for example, one of the products that the printers used was like 45% methylene chloride. So even if the workers are exposed at the permissible exposure limit to methylene chloride, their risk of cancer is still 3.6 per 1,000 workers. So the current standards in terms of the solvent exposures are certainly not health protective. We had a lot of support. You can see the fact sheet over there has all those logos. We had a lot of support from the City and County of San Francisco, Alameda County Green Business Programs, Environmental Health, the Bay Area Quality Management District, State Health Department, and also US PA Region 9, as I was mentioning. So there was a lot of support for this among organizations that have environmental health mandates and are involved in pollution prevention. They really recognize this is a project that they wanted to be part of. But except for these project-specific funding mechanisms to do a kind of a thing, there's really a shortage of institutional interdisciplinary mechanisms to leverage in kind of an ongoing way the benefits of this kind of linkage. So the limitations of this project is that it is a small convenience sample and it may not be representative. In terms of what printers are doing to use printers' use of these chemicals in terms of cleanup products, it's pretty consistent. What we saw is pretty consistent with what's in the literature. But in terms of the participants' support for alternatives, it's probably a very skewed sample because it was a completely voluntary project, so I'm sure we selected out for all those printers who were interested in alternatives. And another thing is that this is California, and so printers in other states may not quite be as familiar with having to comply with environmental regulations as printers in California. So in summary, the low VOC cleanup products evaluated mitigated the printer inhalation exposure and environmental emissions, and they were formulated from chemicals either less toxic to human health than the high VOC organic solvents and or contained a lower concentration of toxic VOC solvents than the higher VOC products. But they didn't mitigate the potential for printer dermal exposure, and some there's also a concern that some of these soy-based products might increase slipping. The ergonomic hazard potential is just if they have to rub a little harder. All of the products aren't the same, but as I had mentioned, reflected these trade-offs between what they're actually trying to do in terms of cleaning and the occupational environmental health benefits. The manufacturers and vendors were key to printer decision-making and could play an important role in the promotion of alternatives, but the market incentives are lacking. There's a lack of complete and comprehensible information, as Tim laid out so well, about evaluating safer cleanup products. And so then to close, we made some recommendations, which were that lithographic printers indeed should implement low VOC, low toxicity cleanup products that were identified by the Institute for Research and Technical Assistance. There's always an essential need for printers to still use gloves, even with safer alternatives. Printers and any workers, as always, when a change is made, need to be trained about what the change is going to be to be sure there's not unintended consequences. We made a variety of recommendations about how to evaluate products in terms of what kinds of chemicals to avoid, and only purchase products, obviously, that have a complete MSDS. And obviously, there's a real important role for regulatory agencies, green business programs, and other governmental and non-governmental organizations in requiring, primarily, and promoting the use of safer alternatives. Research is really needed to describe much further than we were able to do and address the manufacturer and vendor-related supply chain issues. There needs to be established and maintained these institutional interdisciplinary mechanisms, and Tim's talk really kind of was very inspiring in terms of the potential of those kinds of ongoing, the generation of those kinds of relationships in more of an ongoing way. And as always, to evaluate the impacts of pollution prevention measures in an ongoing way. And lastly, but firstly, occupational environmental health professionals and advocates should integrate their efforts to improve worker health and environmental protection and avoid the unintended consequences of shifting risks between workplace and the community.
Thanks, Patrice. I think a really excellent example of implementation of safer alternatives. And I was thinking, Dimitri, you have the hardest thing in relation to safer alternatives for a volcano. I'm not quite sure how you approach that one. But we have 15 minutes or so for discussion and questions, so I open it up to you folks. Questions, comments? Yeah.
Yeah, I can bring it over.
Okay.
Oh, maybe it won't.
The
question is, what is IRTA, the Institute for Research and Technical Assistance? It's a nonprofit, a small nonprofit in Southern California, in Glendale. Katie Wolf and a small staff. Katie's a chemist, a PhD chemist, and a real expert on developing alternatives. And there's this, the lithographic cleanup chemicals was just one of many projects, particularly substitution out of organic solvents from many industries and other kinds of jobs.
So the question, I think everyone could hear it, but it's just whether to go as a legislative approach for a toxic use reduction institute type of thing, which is, the TURI in Massachusetts came as a part of a big reform bill that established funding based on taxing use of chemical products, at least at high levels. So it was, the idea was that the people who were using the chemicals the most would pay for that. We're thinking of it in legislative terms, certainly, although we're also looking to see if there might be some grants available or something like that to help for development. But the coalition was looking to pass legislation to establish that. I think it'll probably end up, my guess is that it'll probably end up staged so that there'd be sort of an initial planning process that would probably have some state funding, you know, I think is probably what the request would be. You know, I don't know exactly how that'll end up. You know, there may be some ways of tapping some funds that flow through, another division that I used to work in, which was the Division of Worker Education, as part of the Workers' Comp Commission, was funded by a tax on 0.2% on workers' comp premiums, and which generated about $1 million a year, you know, to fund an education effort. So there might be some strategy like that of tapping into, industry payments or workers' comp, you know, on the logic that this will, in the long run, reduce exposures and occupational disease. But we haven't gotten that far in terms of specifics. My guess is that we'd probably start with trying to get some planning money for a year or two that would be state, just straight state funded, and use that opportunity to figure out what are the ways, the best ways of funding it long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. We saw it as being a education and technical resource, probably fundamentally. So trying to inform companies, workers, and the environmental community about safer alternatives and this approach. Probably providing tools for evaluation of chemical products, you know, like the controlled banding approach. If people are familiar with Kosh Essentials, which is a British online program that lets you kind of do this based on the toxicity of the chemical and how much you're using and what the volatility is, and then it puts it into control bands, and then you can look at those bands and say, well, let's see, if we change the volatility from here to here, or we change the toxicity from this to this, then we'd only need general ventilation and we wouldn't need local exhaust ventilation, and it also points to best practice fact sheets, and you know, so for printing industry, for example, you tie it to a printing industry fact sheet that says here's best practices for getting rid of VOC solvents. So it would be that. We'd probably tie some technical assistance pieces I don't know if it would be Yukon-based or economic development, you know, an arm of economic development that would actually go out to workplaces and you know, find out what challenges there are that, that companies want solved. And then the other piece that we're thinking of initially, conceivably, is doing a survey of at least manufacturing and maybe some other sectors to try to identify what are the top 10 or 20 chemicals of concern in Connecticut workplaces, and then that could conceivably feed into a reporting mechanism so that you require reporting on the, you know, the 10 top chemicals that seem of concern to Connecticut's economy, and, you know, have that tied into the REACH list of chemicals conceivably. And so, you know, we're kind of thinking of it as a stage progression, but we haven't quite gotten there in terms of how we'd fund it. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was conflating those, but you're right that it's an important distinction. I was thinking of it both in terms of trying to figure out which of kind of the list of the most toxics is being used at all, but then also what are the chemicals that the companies feel like they're using either a lot of or that they're worried about. Yeah. Interesting questions. I'm not sure that I know the answer to them, and I welcome other comments from people that probably know this the answers as well as I do. I think it's going to have a big impact on consumer products. We're getting now these odd things where there's a market for safer products that are being shipped elsewhere in the world, and then more hazardous ingredients are still being used in U.S. products, which is really a turnaround from what we're, I think, as a country used to, and, you know, like, you know, 20 years ago, where sometimes, you know, we'd get the safe products in the U.S. and then the, you know, the dangerous ones would get exported to the third world. And we're getting a flip of that. So, for example, you know, if you want to get a laptop without PBDEs in it, you know, you have to, I have a colleague that had to get a Japanese machine because it was the only way that they could get a laptop that didn't have PBDEs in it. But of course, it came with a Japanese instruction manual and a Japanese, you know, like, you know, keyboard. So, you know, it's not terribly useful. So, you know, to the extent that companies, so I mean, that's one option that companies could have. They could have dangerous, you know, use those products in the U.S. and have a different version of it that they ship to Europe. But I would guess that quite a lot will decide, well, we're just going to do one product, and if we need to formulate it this way to sell it in Europe, we'll sell the same one in the U.S. And I suspect that as that gets implemented, that there'll be more demands for the U.S. to recognize that, particularly if we have a more progressive administration coming in after the next election. That if that doesn't happen just as a market force, that it would get implemented that way. But I'd welcome other comments. I don't think I'm the expert on this one. But it's a great question. Yeah.
Ordinarily, their side of the Atlantic would have said the best time to first others.
Well, there's certainly that history of, you know, like the product life cycle, you know, where, and, you know, I mean, that was true of, you know, after the cotton dust regulation, where they had to replace all the cotton dust equipment to comply with the OSHA standard, and then they found that there was a great market for all their old equipment in the third world, that didn't have the regulation. So that's certainly been a problem historically. My guess is that there'll be companies that will be producing just for the domestic market, just for the U.S., or maybe the Americas that might go that way. But the European Union's the biggest economy in the world right now. So if you are looking to global markets, which most companies are, certainly the ones that I've talked to in Connecticut, you know, the employers and that are thinking about this and have started thinking through, well, what are the implications of REACH? They're going to do whatever that market demands for their products. Yeah. That's a really good observation. Yeah, I mean, I think that that concept's going to get introduced through the globally harmonized system in terms of hazard communication, OSHA is going to be proposing a modification of the hazard communication standard that's going to use those international symbols and risk phrases and so on. And, you know, once I think that process starts, there's going to be just some economic realities that this is a global marketplace, it makes more sense to produce one product and do it the same way everywhere. So I think it's going to, end up in that way, and, as ISO standards and, globally harmonized standards in one way or another, but I don't know how long that'll take. And I saw a hand over here, Dorothy.
Well, just, I wanted to ask a slightly different track. Mm.
Through Colin Powell when he was Secretary of State.
Thank you.
it's amazing. No, it's a really I've never been struck as much by language as I have been on this process. We're actually working on a conference, putting together a conference probably for early February in Connecticut on safer alternatives, green chemistry, REACH, you know, all of these kinds of issues to try to get companies up to speed on this, because for the most part, I think, you know, the observation that you made before that, you know, that companies don't seem to be reacting to this is, I think a lot of them, particularly the smaller ones, don't know about it. You know, it's news to them, you know, and you know, I've been seeing jaws dropping, you know, when they kind of realize that they actually have to deal with a European regulation. You know, it's never been kind of in their consciousness before. But on the language, you know, we spent at least three planning meetings trying to figure out a title for the conference, because we had this diverse planning group, and you know, the environmental groups wanted it as safer alternatives, because that's been the term that's gotten adopted nationally kind of by the environmental side. And businesses said, well, we don't like safer alternatives because that implies that what we have now aren't safe, and we don't want to give that impression that what we're using now, you know, is not safe, you know. And so, you know, we're trying to craft this, and then, you know, like it's, you know, like we talk about, you know, like, you know, chemical policy, and they say, well, it's not just chemicals, you know, because, you know, it's using chemicals, but we're trying to get rid of them and not using other chemicals necessarily, but just other processes. So, you know, then, well, do you say substances? But then everyone says, well, that's, you know, nobody knows what you're talking about with substances. And it was this long, complex, you know, committee discussion on language. And you know, I don't know if it's that everyone now is, you know, like all of the different both environmental coalitions and business coalitions are testing all their phrases and, you know, and trying to figure out, you know, so, you know, companies, for example, like green chemistry, because it makes it sound like chemicals can be safe, you know, so it's sort of that, you know, so, but environmental groups are getting concerned about, you know, using that phrase because it makes it sound like chemicals can be green, you know, and I don't know where it's going to go, but I know it's really hard to get through committee meetings. Part of the coalition strategy is trying to get some common languages.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I think concluding on health and hazard as a topic is probably a good way to end this session. Thanks a lot. It's been a really interesting discussion. Thank you to our presenters for bringing in some of the large and small issues, and you know, people will probably be around for a little while if you want to chat some more. Thanks very much for coming and staying to the bitter end here.